This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Yeah, you cut me too deep. I think I'm dying here, man.
Welcome to the 3B Video Deep Cut Podcast.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes.
It was fun.
Aw, yeah. It's that time again for another bi-weekly podcast with your hosts, Rotten Roger DeMarco and...
Evil, pure, uncorrupted, ancient.
Evil.
not dead, just very much retired.
Oh boy, I'm going to be quoting that this entire podcast. You fucking better believe it. But here we are, another 2 weeks down, another film in the franchise to cover. And this one is a little different because there's multiple versions of this film floating around. And so I guess we'll just do our best to kind of encompass...
Meld them.
Yeah, all the things from all the films. But that's right, we're talking about Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. Or is it...
It's just Halloween, the curse of Michael Myers. Once you get past a certain number, they become afraid to say, yeah, we've made six of these movies now.
Six of them?
How old are you in movies, Michael? Curse.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, but I am pretty sure I saw a trailer way back in the day that said Halloween 6, the origin of evil or the origin of Michael Myers or something to that effect. I know this movie went through multiple title changes, and like you said, they omitted the six at a certain point. You know, this quite possibly, I know 2 weeks ago we covered 5 and we talked about the muddiness.
It ain't got shit on this.
Yeah, this could be the most muddy film in the franchise, but for whatever reason, it's still like my second favorite Halloween movie of all time. So, I'm a complicated guy.
Most definitely. Yeah, this was complicated from the shit that we've seen going from the writing of it to production, mask design, different, alternate cuts... Which there is, for mass consumption, there is the regular run-of-the-mill cut that everybody has. Yep. There's a producer's cut that initially started as a boot edition that was making rounds somehow, some way back in the day when tape trading was a thing. Oh, that doesn't age us at all.
I think I probably have at least 5 different versions of this movie, and they all are different. 'Cause, like you said, producer's cut... there's actually a person on Etsy that sells like a box set of this, and there are 6 different editions of this movie. So eventually I'm going to buy it. I think it's like $30 just so I can see these work prints, these producer's cuts, these director's cuts, these...
What a day you're going to have. I want to watch Halloween 6 times.
Yeah, I watched it 6 times.
What's different? Not much.
Yeah, a couple lines of dialogue. Well, I think there's also like a Weinstein cut, you know, because...
Nobody wants that.
Right, but I'm curious, because those fellas, you know, if they didn't want something to happen, that movie wasn't going to get made. So I'm curious to see, like, what their 100% like shitty influence was. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'll take that out, put this in, switch this around, blah, blah, blah. Like... that type of stuff just intrigues me. All the different cuts of the movie. Like, I know there's a good movie buried in there, which is why I like the movie so much.
And this is, speaking of Weinsteins, because they ran Miramax Pictures, and this is kind of the shoot out the gate for Dimension Pictures, which is an offshoot of Miramax.
Yeah, the low budget.
Which would even go lower when we got to, down the road, we got to Dimension Extreme, and it's like, oh, shit.
There's like
extreme budget cuts, maybe.
Yeah. There's like 2 or 3 really good Dimension Extreme movies, and then...
What are
they? That's about it. Storm Warning. I really, really like Storm Warning. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Of course I haven't. Never even heard of it.
It's pretty rad. It's a very, like, I spit on your grave-esque husband and wife go on vacation, accosted by, you know, shitty local rednecks type of deal. Not
Is there
bad.
A storm in it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's why they're trapped. It's not bad, but, you know, speaking of things that are not bad, this movie is not bad. it's hard to say, like, even though I love this movie, it's hard to say, like, man, this is the greatest Halloween, but because it's so rough around the edges. But if you want to take a look at it on paper, I think you and I can both agree that there is a solid October atmosphere in the film.
Oh, yeah, I'll give it that.
For one. That's a good plus. Two, Michael Myers looks awesome. Like, he looks good. At least in my opinion, thick Michael Myers with the John Carl Beekler mask looks good. So we've got that.
It's a grow on me. Because I first saw it, I was like, man, Michael's a little chunky.
He's a little beefy.
He's a chunky fella. And he looks kind of goofy. The mask looks a little big in some shots. Because I know that your boy Wilbur is in a lot of the shots, but they also had another guy in for some of the...
Yeah, a little more lean.
Yeah, for the inserts, which I'm in that fucking massive camp, I guess, that prefer a real slinky, super slim Michael. Give it that look. So this... the Wilbur looks is a little dumpy to me. Yeah. It looks a little bit like when a kid wears a full-size adult mask. Like, it looks a little off. I mean, shit, we're going to get that in a couple weeks anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And then, okay, so if the mask kind of grows on you and the look of Michael kind of grows on you, the one thing that is indisputable, I will not argue with you, there's no telling me it's not good, is the score for this movie. Holy absolute fuck is the score for this movie pure metal. Just it's Michael Myers cranked up to 11, man, and it's fucking rad. It's totally 1995.
You know, until you started mentioning it to me, I never really paid attention much to the score all. And it's still kind of like, it's that score I don't really notice. So
really?
Yeah. That's not saying
it's a good
bad.
Thing. I suppose that's a good thing because...
Yeah, that's not bad because bad scores you can fucking identify real easily.
And that's in 2 weeks. We are going to... the score for fucking Halloween H2O makes me want to punch kittens. And, you know, we'll get to that. But, dude,
kitten punching in 2 weeks.
Yeah. That's a...
Yeah, bad scores can stick out real, real hardcore. And super over the top, awesome scores do the same thing. But this one just kind of melds into the movie. I literally can only pull out the metal version of the theme song that is in that one shot of In the Rain. Other than that, I can't really think of a whole lot of like audio that stands out to me. So it just melds in with the movie pretty well.
A lot of what I like to call breathy la-las. You know, we have our J.J. Abrams, which is the new thing now, where all scores go boom and fucking sound transformery. Every horror movie plus every action movie does that.
I thought that was trying to like call back to like the horn of apocalypse kind of thing.
Yeah, which
shit's going down.
Yeah, it's just the J.J. Abrams to me. But breathy la-las, on the other hand, a lot of like low like whispery. Or, you know, just wispy, you know, almost a Pet Sematary-esque.
Oh, yeah, that's a good example right there.
Of a breathy la-la, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that should be the photo of, like, a breathy la-la, see image, and it's that. It's just Pet Sematary. Yeah.
It's the opening credits to Pet Sematary and or opening credits to the original Amityville. But,
Man, you got the fucking 411 on breathy la-la movies.
Dude, I live for kind of dissecting these scores. And that's, I feel like to me, what sets this movie apart is it could have just very well, especially since Weinsteins were involved, it could have very easily been a, the other thing that I like to say is a score in a box. Like, oh, I just bought this, I open it up, and bleh, here's all this music that's just so standard, painfully standard music that just doesn't, it can fit any movie. This could be a romantic comedy, blah, put this in the background. This could be an action movie, blah, put this in the background. And that's kind of what they did with Halloween H2O, but they're kind of riding the coattails of, like, Scream, like the way Scream scored movies.
Oh, everything. Everything about what's coming in 2 weeks is going to be riding off Scream, which took place 2 years after Scream came out. But we're not quite there yet. We're in 1995.
Which is why this movie's so dope, because it hasn't been influenced by that next great horror trend, right?
It's the last gasp of pre-Scream days.
Yeah, and it does its best to create an atmosphere that feels similar to the original Halloween. It misses it by a mile. You know, it's not as slow and suspenseful as the original Halloween, for sure. Especially by the time you get to the sixth entry.
Yeah, who could tolerate that? Yeah, no one's going to tolerate that. Like, it's Halloween, say, get to the shit. Get to the shit. We don't need to be suspended. Get to the shit.
Yeah, get to the chopping. And this movie does a really good job of upping the body count, giving us despicable people to get killed. I know when we talked about the first Halloween, we really liked those characters. The second Halloween, the characters are kind of not great. And we kind of follow
there's
this trend.
There's still
some
gray area there, though.
Yeah, we start introducing a lot of characters that by this time, especially the sixth entry, people are here, the asses are in the seat to watch Michael Myers kill people. So there's this weird tonal shift where it's like, I guess I don't necessarily need to care about these people because I'm here to watch him fucking kill them. And it was like a weird, relentless era of horror. Like, you know you're here for Michael Myers. Who cares about these people? And I think the Weinsteins really wanted that. Like, just make him the forefront. Show him as much as possible. He's, you know, he's in daylight. He's slinking around all the time. He's just always there.
Well, I mean, the proof of that is right in the casting. Because they decided they're going to take the challenge of Halloween 5. They're like, fine, we'll write this fucking Man in Black shit into our story. And they do. And the first thing that is the first victim of casting is the character Jamie.
Yeah.
Danielle Harris was going to come back, but she was not going to get paid more than scale. And she wanted to get paid a little bit more for being her third movie, even though it was a small role that she was going to be partaking. But they're like, yeah, we're not going to pay you more than scale because you die in the first act. And that is... that's a telltale sign of things to come right there.
Yeah.
And
it's blasphemy.
And because of that, I am totally giving my brown panty achievement early and on the nose to JC Brandy, our replacement for Danielle Harris. For
ditto.
One, she dies two different ways, either by combine or by, for what the fuck reason, a gunshot to the head in a hospital bed.
Yeah, true.
But also probably because, man, could you even imagine? Thank God this was 1995, and if you wanted to dial up internet bitch about shit, it took a while. But there would be just... this would probably have been like the first real like spewage of Halloween fan hatred.
Yeah, the
is
vitriol.
This recasting bit. Because even back then when this movie came out, and you get the first shot of her rolling into this hospital with the baby, I'm like, who the fuck is that? Jamie, so, I was like, no, that's not that somebody.
Right.
There's more than one person named. That's not. I was like, that's a pope. No.
So two things. She does a fine job, right?
Yeah, she's fine.
I have no problem with her, which is why we can give both of us give her the Brown Panty Award. The other thing is, how dare the Weinsteins or whoever was involved not feel that it's necessary to pay Danielle Harris slightly more than scale to just, you know, for the hardcore fans to give her her send off. And I did kind of just want to bring up, but if you, like, this is where the Halloween toxicity comes in, because if you are vocal and you say, you know what, JC Brandy does okay, right? She does a good job. You get some serious, like, fuck you, buddy, on the internet. And I get the exact same thing whenever I'm like, you know what, I actually, like, really like the Psycho remake. And people are like, you, how fucking dare you? And I'm like, because it's good? I don't know. Like,
I was going to say, just so, for liking this movie, and I'm like, man, that's got to really got to, that's got to piss off the toxic fans even higher. Because I don't know what the reason is, but Halloween 6 gets all the publicity for marketing nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I go to Spencer's, go to Spirit Halloween. Shit is modeled after Halloween 6. There's big throw blankets, Halloween 6. There's hats, Halloween 6. And it's like, why the fuck is Halloween 6 just it?
I think
it's the same thing with Elm Street. Elm Street is entirely marketed now with the 2010 remake model for the glove. For everything you see.
Or every time you see Freddy's face, it's the Freddy versus Jason face.
Yeah, and I was like, why did they just settle on this one? I mean, you can vary it up. You don't have to settle on one. But I was like, why the hell have all the... For Halloween, they settle on this one. They're like,
I don't know.
Maybe it's in the middle of the fucking series. Like, pick the one right in the middle and do that.
Yep.
But Halloween 6 gets all the marketing, like...
I'm okay with that because I
know you. I see it all the time. I'm like, fuck, Roger would love this. Oh, Roger would love that. But at the same time, I was like, why is it always this movie that gets it?
I don't know, man. But
I don't know.
2 weeks ago, we mentioned the audacity of the filmmakers attempting to sweep in a new Myers house like no one was going to fucking notice. A big blue fucking stupid house. This movie, they kind of do the same thing. Like, it's close enough, right? It's got a porch. So, the house looks okay in this movie. It's an easier pill to swallow than the Halloween 5 house.
The house
but it still ain't right.
By comparison, the house is a Nuprin-sized pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to figure out the lineage of this fucking family at point makes... no goddamn sense.
It's some Game of Thrones shit. It's fucking all over the place.
So, take me through it here. So, Michael is back.
Yes.
He has killed his blood niece.
Niece, yeah.
Who, in between the two different cuts, may or may not, but may have impregnated his niece with his baby.
Yeah, that's where it gets weird.
But he's... but he's also still out to kill Kara Strode, who, I mean, what is the relationship back to the original family here?
It's
adopted, like, foster family that he's going after here? Because even trying to do this shit in my head right now, even though I feel like I know it, I'm like, wait, what?
I think it's a case of, I think it's like, the mom says something like, that's why we moved here, because your brother couldn't sell the house. So I think John, the dad, his brother.
Was OG Strode Realty?
Yeah, is OG Strode Realty. So I think that's.
That adopted.
Yeah. It's really fucking muddy. And, you know, by the time you get to this...
Pepe Sylvia! I feel like I need the strings and the fucking magic marker to do this shit in my head. Or is this too early in the morning?
It is early. And I'm slowly getting caffeine into my blood. But
it's like, oh my God, why is this... Fucking move, this family. It needs to move.
Even if you have it, completely laid out and you're looking at it, it's still very muddy. But again, it's the sixth entry in the franchise. And we started kind of getting into this weird motif right here, actually, where we revisit in Halloween Resurrection, to where it's basically like, I guess if you're just in his house, you're fucking toast. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to come home. That starts to become, like, it was the tagline in the first movie, you know.
Oh, Halloween Kills totally stole this shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He just wants to go home.
and Halloween Resurrection is like just a bunch of fucking people in his house, so he's got to kill them, you know?
Get out of my house.
Yeah. I left the back door unlocked. That's what I did. So it's just, it doesn't matter. Like, and I hate to be the Weinsteins or whoever was in charge of this movie, just going, it doesn't matter. People don't care. They want to watch him kill people. You know, let them leave the theater, scratch their head and go, but who was related to who and the how and the what now? Like, it didn't matter. All that mattered is we got your ticket money and haha, fuck you. You know, you just sweep the plot under the rug and trick you into watching a new Michael Myers movie. And as shitty and shady and as magician-esque as that is, it fucking worked. And I watch this movie like once every 2 weeks and I still don't fucking understand it, but I love this movie so much.
Or why the fuck? I have a hard time believing that our most insane doctor, which this is his swan song for the franchise, to a degree, but definitely the actor, not the character, but Donald Pleasance, Dr. Loomis character. This is taking place, was it 5 years?
After, yeah, I think five.
After the previous film. So we should be, it should be right on track for being accurate to 1995.
Right.
And Loomis has retired after this is why I refuse to believe this dude retires after Michael Myers disappears with his niece, and there's a police station with cops platooned full of bullet holes, and he's just been missing for 5 years. I feel like he'd be like he was in Halloween 5, just waiting at some hospital or police station
waiting for
shit to go south. But I guess he's just at home writing his memoirs now. He's done. This is the most unbelievable part for this character for me, is that he would give this shit up at any point.
Yeah, because he's so obsessed with Michael Myers.
Guaranteed that's what he's typing about, too.
Oh, yeah. But we got to pass the torch to now introducing Paul Rudd as Tommy Boyle.
Our first as Scream, this past year, Scream would say, our first legacy character.
Yes. You know, he's the young boy who survived in the very first Halloween. So we come a little full circle to kind of give you a tie-in to the original Halloween. And now he's kind of taken over the mantle of crazy Dr. Loomis. Like, he literally does have the blackboard, you know, with all the string.
Oh, yeah. Newspapers, strings, drawings, and a really high-tech recording system to record... Yeah. The radio, which, man, talk about, it's really 1995 when shock jock talk radio is the hottest thing going. So they had to have that for this movie. So instead of Howard Stern in Haddonfield, we have the Barry Sims talk show.
Hello, Haddonfield.
Apparently this entire goddamn town listens to this shock jock.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter if you're in a hospital, a train station, or an old doctor's retired home.
I will attest to that small town way of thinking. We have about an hour from us. We have a big city, and they got themselves one of them radio shows. It's called the Todd and Tyler Radio Show, and every single person that is in my area listens to Todd and Tyler in the morning.
But
you know,
businesses play it too? Like, if you go into the local...
Yes.
Really? Wow.
Yes. You walk in and they're like, you know, making jokes about what's in the headlines or, you know, and then now they're shifting into sports mode, so we get to hear them fucking talk about football, which I don't listen for.
So you're like
a good...
So you're living that Ash vs. Evil Dead pilot where he's listening to the song in his fucking car and then he goes into the fucking bar and it continues playing in the bar?
Yeah.
You're living that with the Barry Sims talk show?
Yeah, we have our very own. It's just called Todd and Tyler. And it's decent, which is why everyone listens to it, you know?
Are there such a thing as shock jocks anymore, though? Is shock jocking still a thing? I feel like that totally, like, kind of went...
It's just podcasters. We say what we want.
Yeah, but no one hardly listens to us.
That's
true. Or podcasters. We don't have a national platform. I feel like that totally shock jock shtick died out in like the late 90s. Like when
when
Howard Stern's movie came out, that was the end of the shock jock's stranglehold on the airwaves. But I guess podcasting is probably the successor to that, and it's already getting its dick kicked in the dirt on like skit comedy shows and stuff, and like, well, everybody's got a podcast now. Every dad's got their own podcasting equipment in their basement saying outlandish shit.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's true.
It's 100% true.
Where are we right now? We're in basements.
True. And yet we've not had anyone topless barking like a dog sitting
riding
next to
a speaker.
Yet. Yeah.
Right.
Turn the treble all the way up.
Down in the bass all the way up. Orgasm on air.
It's the best sex I've ever had in my life.
So Barry Sims actually fits in quite nicely to this, you know, this little story. Because, again, it's so muddy. For a movie with not really a plot, there's a lot of plot mud, you know? Halloween has...
They try. And it was, the first draft was written by, that Daniel Ferrance guy who was just a hardcore fan.
Mm-hmm.
Which, man, we needed that.
Yeah.
Then, but with more power. Like today, that's the gold standard for writing anything. Comic books, horror franchises, any of that shit. If there's an established property behind it, the smart money is to get hardcore fans to be the puppet master for it.
Yeah.
This was completely out of left field, where we didn't hire a professional writer at first, or someone from Hollywood. We went to a hardcore fan, to get the story, and that is completely unheard of, and definitely in 1995.
Well, I mean, we kind of did the same thing with Jason Goes to Hell. We let a young kid who was a massive
Friday the 13th fan, but letting someone dictate what the story is going to be.
True.
That's where it's what? No. Even going up to Freddy versus Jason, there was no fan control.
No.
Over
Ronnie Yu is not even a fan of them. So
of the property. Yeah. It was no, we're the money guys. We'll decide what the fuck you take and you'll take it.
I want to fist fight Ronnie Yu.
Why Ronnie Yu? He's okay.
No, he's not okay.
He's fine.
Ronnie Yu sucks, but...
he's just fine. Leave that old man alone.
So, the cool thing that's done in this movie that is... It just kind of comes and goes, and it's just background, essentially, is the fact that Haddonfield has had enough of Halloween. They we're not celebrating it anymore, which is weird that they're not celebrating it, but... the Strodes still have up Halloween decorations, and there are kids in their yard in Halloween costumes. The town doesn't want to celebrate Halloween anymore, and that's why we have the Barry Sims talk show come, and we have, the lead's brother and his girlfriend kind of leading this rally. You know what? It's time to bring Halloween back. It's time to... celebrate again. Michael Myers is gone, blah blah blah.
Talk about a different era too of trolling. Today you just log on the internet and you troll this family. These kids went to the fucking extremes of buying displays and putting them in the front yard of this house. That's some dedication kids do not have today as far as trolling somebody goes.
No. Enough of this Michael Myers bullshit.
How many times do you think he's torn a display down just in the past week? You think he's got one every single day?
That would explain the axe. You know what I mean? Finally pushed him.
No, this
over
is, I don't think this is the first time.
Starts twitching and shit. I swear to fucking God.
That dude, if he wasn't had his head exploded in the basement, that dude was definitely headed for a coronary any minute.
Oh yeah. Which, that's another thing we gotta kind of talk about. If
the domestic violence?
I was gonna talk about the gore.
Mm.
If you haven't seen the producer's cut, which this is where it's weird to me. The theatrical cut has way more gore.
I mean, it's messier, yeah.
It's a very messy film. And the producer's cut has all the dialed back kills, which almost feels TV edit-ish, but more Loomis, more dialogue. So it really...
More ruins and Cult of Thorn and rocks.
That
and
alternate
shit.
Ending is infuriating to me.
I can imagine. Every time I do see that ending where he's just stopped by a fucking pile of rocks.
What have they done to you?
And he's standing there. I'm like, I feel Raj like just getting annoyed with that immediately.
Yeah.
Like, rocks wouldn't stop Michael.
No. So I've discussed this a few times, and I might have discussed this when we covered this on our live stream.
Way back
which you can
when.
Find on 3B Video on the YouTubes, where we give a good 2+ hours to this movie. The problem with this movie, amongst all the other problems, really, is the ending. You don't stick the landing. And the reason being is Donald Pleasance passed away during the filming of this movie, so
yeah,
we don't get...
I thought they filmed all his stuff, but he passed away when they were doing, like, additional dialogue. Like, he was just doing audio.
Something to that effect, but
that's what
I
want to recall, but
okay.
I could totally be wrong.
I just feel like... the way that it's cut together, both endings, as a matter of fact, are just, they're so unsatisfying. And the theatrical cut ending is better. It's way better. But it's, so, I feel like what you could do, which they did with Halloween Kills, we got a guy who looks like Donald Pleasance, and he does a phenomenal job. Tom Jones, I
believe
was his name.
Too good of a job.
But here's
it's not
what
unusual
my,
to be Dr. Loomis, man.
You need, all you need is a body double that you can shoot from the back, that's a bald guy in a trench coat or whatever, to go in to the hospital and Michael to step out. You know what I mean? Like, Michael to give you that one final jump scare grabbing at Loomis, and then we cut to the pumpkin or whatever, and we got the we got the Loomis scream.
That's
all we need is that
so
extra
goddamn weird.
We just need that extra stab, that extra sting of he's not dead, but he got Loomis.
We
you
need
know?
More than that.
But I mean, even that would do it.
It feels like they had like 10 minutes of film left, and they're like, shit, we've only got 2 minutes before we have to hit our end time. Smash mm-hmm. cut to this pumpkin on the steps in a where the fuck location?
Strode house.
Yeah, this is a smash cut into a pumpkin. Like, what the fuck is going
to
on?
To remind you just watched a Halloween movie.
Yeah, that's the most TV edit it feels like, because like, you feel like there is a scene there, but they couldn't show it on TV, so they just cut to this pumpkin and pipe in some dialogue that went on a little bit ago and just mm-hmm. use that. Like,
yeah, if we just got... I mean, and you don't even have... Like I said, it doesn't even have to be a like, full-blown showdown between him and Loomis, but...
This is a stinger of like what is going to happen.
Yeah, the definitive end. Like... At least enough to make you wonder, like, oh boy, by the next one, they'll tell us what happened to Loomis, you know? But that also lets you say, Michael's alive, this did not work, and now Loomis is dead. And then you end it with the, you know, in loving memory of Donald Pleasance.
Which of the endings do you prefer of the, between the, it's your theatrical. Game now, or
fuck
the...
Fuck that!
Or the screaming, and then we get the mask dropping... And whatever happens to Loomis happens off screen in this smash cut to pump.
The theatrical cut, because at least the theatrical cut implies that Loomis is getting killed by Michael Myers. But
you like
we
that
just
Thorn like imprinting on his wrist?
No, I do not. Like that's where the whole like that producer's cut, as good as it is. For the extra dialogue and the other things that are happening, giving us more Loomis, like because we all want more Loomis. The problem is, the more you talk about this cult, the harder it becomes to follow. At least for me, and I have a Thorn cult tattoo. Like, I love it, but I don't understand it. And the more they keep rambling and doing all this stuff, like you said, you were even scratching your head. So he impregnated his niece, but he still wants to kill his niece. But he wants to kill the people in the house
that aren't even related to him anymore. Like, those are not blood related at all.
Yeah, so he's trying to wipe out his bloodline.
He's already done it. Now he's going after adopted family.
But then he wants to... So why impregnate Jamie and kill Jamie and then put the curse into the baby? Why not put the curse into Jamie, like, which is essentially implied at the end of Halloween 4?
Yeah, that's what they did before, and then backtrack that shit, but that was two movies ago now, so they can't go back and do it now.
So it doesn't make sense to impregnate her, to kill her, to put the curse into her child. Like, that's where it's like, I'm fucking over this, okay? And then with the producer's cut, when they, like, show her tied up on the rock and Michael, like, coming over like he's gonna hump her, it's like, is this real life? Like, it feels like a fever dream.
Yeah, am I watching Freddy's Nightmares here?
Yeah. The theatrical cut, which most people absolutely hate, at least does a good job of just pushing through all the extra and creating a straightforward as the story allows, straightforward slasher movie.
I'll say, by comparison, I'll take the theatrical cut easy.
Amen. Like, amen.
The producer's cut, yeah, we have for novelty purposes, but it's not. I don't think ever that we've known each other that one of us has been watching the producer's cut for the fuck of it, just to throw on.
So, it's a very Freddy's Nightmares effect. So there's something to that. Like, when we were growing up, the producer's cut, like you already touched on, was this sought after, like, oh my god, it's an X-rated cut or whatever, you know? Like, there's all these things, like,
there's more to the story we did.
You'd go on eBay and spend $50 on a bootleg VHS that's work print, dub after dub after dub after dub, the lowest quality
seventh
possible.
Seventh generation, yeah.
So you're hunting for this. It's like a grail, a holy grail tape. Like, please give me more of this movie. Like, this is before internet. This is before people would upload the scenes on fucking YouTube.
I said, this is tape trader days.
Yeah, so the hunt was what was special. And then when Miramax or fucking Lionsgate or whoever put out that unrated producer's cut Blu-ray, we were like, holy fuck. Like, you don't have to go on the internet and buy a bootleg and you know, go meet some dude in an alley.
Wonder what the poor people are watching now.
Yeah. So it was a day one purchase, like, fucking A, the producer's cut,
yeah,
in high definition. I'm so fucking hyped.
Yep.
And then as soon as you rewatch it, you go, this was not really worth, like, fucking 20 years of my life. Like,
but it
seeking
was,
this.
I remember, at least it was accurately priced. It was not even like $11.
Yeah.
For that,
which
Blu-ray.
Is funny now. Have you looked it up now? It goes for over $100.
What?
Yeah, that cut that we both have.
Fuck, I might just sell that shit just...
I had two copies of it.
You need to sell that motherfucker.
No. So here's what happened. I had two copies of it. Strange Monkey Reviews let a buddy borrow his producer's cut, and they just kept it. So he's like, dude.
Oh, he cashed in that $100.
So he was like, I really want that producer's cut, but it's so expensive. I said, I've got two of them. I said, what's your address? And I mailed him the other one. You know, just to be like,
Strange Monkey, we're gonna need that bag.
Gonna need that money, buddy. I know he listens to the podcast, so if you're listening,
$95 check would be nice. I'll just take that. Split that two ways between me and Raj, because I want half of that commission.
This,
for no
this
reason.
This is an IOU for a Halloween 6 producer's cut.
Producer's
might want to hang on to that one.
Yep, this is going to increase in value tenfold,
exponentially. Which
Could
is
you
weird.
Imagine
like,
that? Can you imagine? If we knew that shit then, like, we're just buying all, like, the four copies of this movie at Walmart, being like, we're going to spend $50 and explain to the wives, nah, believe me, in, like, 10 years, we're going to easily make, like, $600 off this.
Yeah, no shit.
This is an investment for life.
I know you don't watch Rick and Morty, but there's a scene in Rick and Morty where Rick is all excited about these limited edition Nintendo DSs. And there's no limit at the store for how many you can buy. So he's like, everybody come with me. We're going to go buy these DSs. Buy them all. Keep them. Sell them a year later. Like, we're going to get rich. We're going to get rich off the DSs, Morty. Like, this whole fucking thing about going and buying these limited edition Nintendo DSs. And, yeah. So that's what that makes me think of. We hoard all the Halloween 6s.
I mean, we need to do it next time because history has shown we didn't buy that Halloween holy shit Shout Factory
box
edition
set.
When it came
we
out.
We fucked up on
and
that.
And now that thing costs an arm and a leg and your soul if you wanted
like
to own it.
$500.
Yeah. We didn't do it with the Friday the 13th when that set first kind of dropped. That
no,
had
I
that.
Did. Oh, no, you're talking
no,
the
no,
10.
No, no. Yeah, no, that original yeah. set of Friday the 13th that came with the patch.
Yeah.
Not the Shout Factory one, which I argue is
we bought
a lot
day
better.
One. Yeah, yeah, it's way good.
So
it's
we've learned. Awesome. We've learned that, like, well, if we don't jump on this, we're going to have to pay 7 times the price in a year's time. So we should just do it now. It's easier to ask for permission forgiveness than permission. So we just go for it.
Well, even the Elm Street Blu-ray set that you and I both have goes for a fairly high price now.
That original?
That you have covered in the Blu-ray set.
Really? I still see it for about $50.
I've seen it upwards of 100 in a couple places. Wow. And I'm like, God, man.
They're fucking wrong.
Yeah, well, I think eventually Scream Factory is going to release a special edition of that.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'll have to send you an Etsy link. There's a person who made... You can buy, like, a big, fancy box and individual DVD cases or Blu-ray cases with the original artwork.
Oh, shit.
To make your Elm Street set.
But you couldn't because, like, that Blu-ray set has 2 movies per disc on it.
That's true. Suppose you could put your DVDs in there. I don't know. To make
just
it look
leave
super
them blank.
Cool. Yeah.
These are blanks. The real movies are in this one. I go, you can go evens or odds.
Yep. Oh, man. So,
what else you got?
I got plenty.
I know you got plenty. How about that? Why the fuck did Dr. Loomis not? He's a smart-ish guy. Why was he not wise to when Dr. Wynn's like, I want you to replace me?
Back.
And fucking yeah. Loomis looks at least 30 years older than Wynn. Like, why are you picking a man on his deathbed as your successor?
I do not know.
The fuck
you
does
think,
that mean?
You would think Loomis would be wise to that, but...
Nor do I picture, because we had no idea Dr. Wynn was the man in black.
Right.
And after we know it, it's really goofy to try to imagine this dude gunning down a police station. Like, he seems like a guy who would be really inept of doing that particular
yeah.
job.
I do want to talk about a couple of things, which one they use in the trailer, which is phenomenal. The little girl dancing in the blood. Mommy, it's raining. It's raining red. Dancing in Barry Sims' blood from the tree above.
Strung from which, Christmas lights.
Yeah, really good. Really good sequence. It's one of the ones that comes to my mind when I think of Halloween 6. The other thing that is super awesome, which I think is what catapulted this movie into my like top of Halloween, because I've told this story before, I'm a giant Jason fan, and we were kind of going through this era where we didn't have Jason. The last Jason we had was Jason Goes to Hell, and then we didn't get Jason again for a fucking decade. So this movie filled my Jason gap by making Michael thick and relentless, but the last half hour of this movie, at least the regular cut, the theatrical cut, in the hospital where he murders like 40 fucking orderlies in a strobe light, and then that whole underground tunnel chase, the flare gun to the chest, like all of that stuff, and again that music, bump, 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 it's so.
He's air guitaring
good.
Right now. You can't see it because it's an audio format, but. He can't help but go into air guitaring. When he's recreating this score.
But, like, the way he's walking in those tunnels, he's borderline running. It's so fucking scary. Like, that whole ending of the movie. And the other thing I really like, which I don't have an explanation for, and I don't really care, is when Paul Rudd takes that lead pipe to Michael. And it's like fucking green and black slime flying out of his mouth.
Oh, yeah, what the hell he's bashing in.
Don't care. Fucking cool. Like, again, very seizure-inducing, like a really rapid edit style to sell
rapid
the
is
violence.
Too slow for what this is. It's ludicrous speed.
Yeah, but we're selling the violence, and it feels violent. I know Cinema Snob and a couple other people that we've seen review it are like, wow, that editing is terrible. And I'm on the other side of the spectrum where I'm like, man, I feel like I don't know. I've never like had that level of violence done to me, obviously, because I would
bashed,
be dead.
You not had your head bashed in or bashed in someone's noggin with a lead pipe?
Never with a lead pipe. I've been punched 100 times on the ground, or I've punched someone. You know what I mean? Like
times
I've
on the ground.
Yeah. I mean, well, it comes with the territory of cage fighting. But like,
I thought it was coming with being a Halloween fan.
That's what it feels like. I feel like that's a very good visual representation of what frenzy feels like. You know what I mean? Like when you lose control, and it's to me, I'm like, you couldn't do that much better. The only, and I know you might dispute this, but I actually really like this, and we'll get to in a couple weeks when we cover Rob Zombie's Halloween. But the other side of that coin is having the camera stay on the action and no cuts, but the camera moves, so it feels intense. It feels very like frenetic and violent, where it could just be someone walking down a hallway trying to get away from Michael, who's in hot pursuit, but the camera's moving, so you feel uneasy, you feel the danger, the pace, you know. Two different sides of the coin: staying on the action and shaking the camera, or just cut, and they both feel the same to me. So much so that I'm doing both in this new Tapehead movie. We did a lot of like, I would tell Megan I'd go Rob Zombie it, and she would do the camera thing. So it feels intense. It feels like you're watching an episode of Cops. You know what I mean? Like the camera is there trying to focus on it.
I can't pick either one. Like I'm not. I can't say 100% like I prefer this over this. Like I think it just depends on the situation. So in this situation, yeah, it works for it. In other movies, like a future Halloween directed by a guy from White Zombie, not quite necessarily the same effect.
Mm.
Which what a statement that is! A Curse of Michael Myers, better filming quality than Halloween Rob Zombie edition. But we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. So I don't really have anything else. I mean, you know, we talked about the gore, talked about introducing Paul Rudd, cool hospital stuff.
And that you kind of forget about, too. Like, that rage, like, you, like, in the moment, you're like, Jesus. I was like, that's not super warranted, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But, he is supposed to be the kid from the first movie, which you kind of forget about. And believe me, watching it the first time, we were like, who the fuck is he supposed to be? I'm like, I don't know. And then like probably an hour after finishing the movie, you're like, nah, he's that fucking kid from the first, because she's babysitting too. He's the boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And then it all makes sense.
Well, what doesn't make sense is how the fuck did Michael know that Barry Sims wanted to go to the Myers house and was going to be driving this random van to get there, and he's just waiting in the back of this van. He's like, Barry Sims is going to move his show over here.
Well,
just gotta wait for him to
get
the
van.
It's
not a random van. If you pay attention, it's not a random van. Barry Sims gets in the wrong white van. Barry Sims gets in the Smith's Grove Sanitarium van, and that's why he can't find the keys. And then the camera pulls out, and we reveal that the
so
Barry
is he just
Sims,
strategizing his shit back there, and then just happened to have a dude get in the wrong van?
I guess.
Like,
maybe he's taking a nap.
He's in there. What the hell is he doing? He's napping. Evil doesn't sleep.
No, but it stands fucking still when rocks are around it. So here's the other thing is
there's rocks in the van.
Well, the thing is, there's some exposition where Tommy says, you know, whenever this constellation of stars appears periodically through Halloween night, Michael appears. So there's this weird tie-in to, like, so when the stars align, he's, like, powered, you know, by the cult juice, astrology, astronomy, whatever it's fucking called, you know, like, runes and all that hippie shit, which my wife is really into, but I don't know.
So she loves this movie, then.
Yeah, I don't know fuck all about that
stuff. She loves the cult of Thorn, the rune
actually,
of Thorn.
My wife truly despises all things Michael Myers, so...
Really?
Yeah, she's not. She's like, I fucking hate these movies. And
is it because you burned her out on them? Is that it?
She just doesn't think he's cool or scary. Like, if she wants to watch a slasher, she watches Friday the 13th movies. Or
I mean, I get that on some
of
my
other
stuff. Like, I know I burned the wife out on some shit. Where she's like, I don't want to see or hear about this anymore. So I thought, oh, maybe it's the same thing there. Like, you just have them on so much. She's like, I really don't want to watch any Halloween movies.
I do watch them a lot.
Will she watch the new one though? When it comes
out. She's gonna have to. there ain't no way around it.
It's not quite exactly what I asked. I was like, will she watch it? You're like, well, she has to.
Yeah, no, we'll go to the theater.
She
the
wants
day
to make it to October 15th. She's gotta make it through the 14th of watching this movie.
Yeah, it'll be the 12th or the 13th when we see it, because we'll see it before it opens.
I don't know when it opens.
Because I'd like
to go to the theater, but I'm going to be realistic, and it's probably going to be in a Peacock situation here again.
I'm going to watch it in the theater before it opens, then I'm going to watch it in the theater opening night, and then I'm going to watch it at home 42 million times until it comes out on Blu-ray. That's just the way I am.
Which I've already saw the optimal time for release for the disc is like December 27th, so right before New Year's. But
yep.
We'll be reviewing, I imagine, I don't know how many more we got, but we will be reviewing Halloween Ends before it gets to discs, so.
Before we move on to our next segment, I just do want to say, rest in peace, Donald Pleasance, because he does do a phenomenal job in this movie, and it sucks that we didn't get more of him, but like you said, we get some Loomis, callbacks here in some... Yeah, it's not the same.
It is not the same. So long to the worst goddamn doctor ever in film. just the worst. But I felt the same way like back when this came out. I even said it during the live stream as they put the local paper put a little thing about the movie and that he died in it. And I didn't know, it was 1995, I was a fucking kid. I didn't know when you called someone a lovable old ham that was kind of a compliment. I was like, what the fuck is he saying? He's fat? Saying he's just a fat old, shit? I'm going to write him a hate letter. Totally wrote a hate letter to an opinion guy of the local paper for this dragging Donald Pleasance's name through the mud. Like, no, you respect Dr. Loomis. He's trying to save us.
Yeah, you're a ham.
Kids are stupid,
jerk,
man.
Yeah. but now that we've spent nearly an hour discussing this film, it's time to move on to the next segment, Evil. So what does that mean?
It's Roger's favorite time. It's time to talk about people who don't like Halloween Curse of Michael Myers. It's the curse of the Amazon one-star reviews.
Hated it. There are nobody online who hate this movie.
Well, I found a few like S. Heck on August 2nd, 2004. One star, bad, bad, bad. If you can locate the producer's cut of this movie, I hear that's better. Here, spelled H-E-R-E.
It's right here.
What we have here is a mess. I'm sure if John Carpenter had watched this movie, he would just laughed at this mess. The story goes in a direction that makes the sequel such a turkey.
Gobble, gobble, bitch.
If you're new to the Halloween movies, watch Halloween. Halloween 2. Skip parts 3 through 6, as the producers did when they made H2O. Then watch Halloween H2O. And then skip Halloween 8. This is mandatory watching to see how not to make a sequel.
Wowza. Well, at least he got the timelines right. You know what I mean? Like
spelling is shit, but he got the timelines right. So,
yeah. So I guess kudos for steering people to alternate timelines. But
sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
A few rapid fire ones. Shirley Cardell, December 13, 2019, one star. Does the block not work? I put a block on things so they couldn't be ordered. Evil never dies, and you can't block evil. It still will be purchased, even if you don't want to purchase.
So this movie gets a one star because I put an adult block on, but then I ordered this movie?
She's one starring the lack of blocking technology that would stop her from ordering this movie. Was she like showing it off to friends? Like, I have a block on my thing now. You can't order shit over a certain rating. Like, watch. Let's say Halloween. Curse of Michael Myers. We can't buy this shit. Click, click. Oh, fuck. I owe $20 to Amazon now. Delete, 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 delete.
Yeah, now I have to go on there and tell them I'm angry.
I have to go one star this movie really quick for it allowing me to order it.
Curse Nick. The curse of technology.
Yes. Old Nick on October 16th, 2020, he says one star, bad, very bad.
A lot of bads in the titles.
Yep. Pepe Silvia, August 18th, 2017, one star, titles it one star. Makes no sense with the rest of the storyline.
Okay. Agree, but also slightly disagree.
He's not wrong.
No.
Next, got a couple of longer ones here that has had to tell us in detail some shit. So this is from the Great Shag. GR numeral 8 Shag. So he's a great fuck. I don't know.
All right. Shag me rotten, baby.
March 5th, 2004. One star. Curse of Michael Myers is cursed. As I was critiquing a lot of slasher series that have been made over the years, the one movie that jump started this trend, Halloween, has produced some of the lamest slasher sequels since the last four Friday the 13th. The fifth sequel is no exception. Jamie Loy, now a grown woman, and still Michael Myers' niece, I don't know why that would change, is still being stalked by her uncle, but this time she has a baby. And Michael can't have visitation rights, so to speak. Also, a family has moved into Michael's old home, and he isn't pleased about that either. Donald Pleasance returned for the final time as Dr. Loomis. There is also mention of a cult. The tall man with the cowboy boots gets explained, etc. This film sucked. Pleasance, who has done better acting in the past, looks like he is there for his big paycheck. I hope it was a big paycheck. Rumor has it, there is a director's cut of the film somewhere, because for reasons I'm not sure of, Dimension Films cut down the film's runtime to Dimension Films. All I can say is, thank you, thank you, thank you!
Oh, boy. That was a long-winded grumpy boy.
Well, to go along with him a little bit, we have Wes Sailors Jr. S-A-Y-L-O-R-S Jr.
Knew his dad, great guy.
Yes, Wes Sr., hell of a guy. Jr., total piece of shit. But on August 25th, 2001.
Oof.
One star. This gruel shows blatant hatred for Halloween fans. This dreck is cynical and unredeeming. Not even entertaining in a slasher flick sense. The problem arises when producers wish to keep the Michael Myers gravy train rolling, but have no course on which to set it. John Carpenter established that Myers was pure evil, and that worked within the relentless context of the first film, but as time goes by and movies get made, the excuses for bringing back Myers become not only silly, but so unimaginative as to show a complete disregard for the money-paying public. Curse of Michael Myers has no creative core, only producers and distributors after a quick buck. It's a shame, because Michael Myers started out pretty good kid. Now look at what he's turned into. Beware of this movie and return to the source, Halloween is still in the scariest movie you can put into your VCR.
Oh,
wow,
damn.
That's a 2001 statement.
Yeah, it is.
He's hanging on for dear life.
Well, and you know what? He's not wrong about a lot of the stuff he says, because I even said that in the first hour. Like, definitely feels like a doesn't matter, get the butts in the seat type of movie. So I agree to
it's that
point.
Era.
Was that the final Amazon one-star review?
No, I got one more that's even older than that.
Oh, boy. All right, let's go.
From Rock. September 27th. 2000.
Whoa. That's fucking nuts.
1 star. And pre-warning, this, of course, is
all caps. You better step back, son.
Attention, Hollywood! This film has a director's cut, which is supposed to be 100 times better than the producer's slashed version. Will somebody please return this on DVD? Halloween 6 is an awful film, but from what I have read, the director's cut is excellent. Somebody needs to put it on the shelves for true fans to see.
See, again, 2000. That was that hunt. That
2000
hunt.
For a director's cut, not a producer's cut. He is looking for a director's cut.
Mm.
A Joe Chappelle director's cut.
I don't
which
know.
I've heard of. There's this cut, the producer's cut, and even on the bonus features of the Blu-ray, one of the guys, the Malik Akkad, is saying that there's even a version still that's not been, it's not quite either of those movies that exists somewhere.
And I want it. Well, all right, Mr. 2000, you know, out there hunting. You're hunting it, ain't you? And you'll get it eventually.
That's
if you held on.
That's a 22, almost 23-year-old review.
Yeah, if you held on, you probably got that producer's cut on Blu-ray, so.
He's definitely sold that shit twice over.
Yeah, he did. Well, now that we're done with the Amazon one-star reviews, Evil, what does that mean?
It's time to play the game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
It's all about the game and how you play it. And when Michael Myers is 6 years old, he stabbed his sister to death. He locked up for years in Smith's Grove Sanitarium, but escaped soon after. Halloween became another word for mayhem. One by one, he kills entire family until his 9-year-old niece, Jamie Lloyd, was the only one left alive. 6 years ago, Halloween night, Michael and Jamie vanished. Most people believe them dead, but I believe someone hid them away. Someone who knows Michael, protects him, tries to control him. But there's one thing I know, you can't control evil. You can lock it up, burn it, bury it, and pray that it dies. But it never will, it just rests a while. Then you lock your doors, say your prayers, but the evil's out there waiting. And maybe, just maybe, it's closer than you think.
Wow, well done, Lemmy, sir. Holy fuck. I just kept waiting for it to end. It just kept going.
Much like the movie, it didn't.
Oh, it did not end. Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine Lemmy calling in to fucking that radio station? I was 6 years old.
Lemmy as Tommy Doyle.
I was at the school magazine.
Holy crap, that's right, it's time to play the game. And if you're new here, welcome. And you're probably scratching your head saying, what is the game? Well, the game is a deep cut in and of itself where you have to pick a prop from the movie that we are covering, but it can't be a well-known prop. So since we are covering Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, you can't pick Michael's mask, you can't pick his butcher knife, you can't pick his overalls, because those are all low-hanging fruit. As Evil likes to say, you gotta go deep, or...
you get hung by Christmas lights in a tree in your boxer shorts.
It's raining.
Bleeding.
It's raining. Warm. It's raining Barry Sims.
It's the Barry Sims talk show.
That's right. So find us on all your social media platforms. Find us on this podcast apparatus. Leave a comment. Rate us. Whatever is clever. Let us know the prop that you pick for the film. I can't remember who went first. 2 weeks ago. So
could have been either one of us.
Yeah, could have been.
Probably was.
So I think I'll go first.
Go for it. Which I figure, I imagine this is hard for you.
It's really tough. It's really tough. There's plenty of cool things in this movie. Weird things. Weird things. A lot of implements of death and destruction used. You know, cool stuff like axes, weird hospital knives and things of the ilk. But I think if I get to take a prop from this movie, as weird as it is, I think I want the fetus in the jar that they take the fetus out of to try and trick Michael. It's your baby. It's your baby. The little fucking fetus. So
that's dark.
I'm going to take that fetus. I had a fetus.
Yeah,
for
we
the
had
first tape.
Yeah, we
it
had
fell
fetus
apart
in the movie. It was, yeah, we just stole that straight from Curse of Michael Myers. Now that that's out there now. That's kind of dark.
Gross.
I went the other route. I'm going to take Barry Sims' fucking heart boxer shorts.
Nice. Or his trench coat, yeah.
I thought the trench coat. No, I could have gone with the trench coat. Could have gone with the fucking duster boots.
Yeah.
Clanking fucking cowboy boots. But I was like, nah, give me Barry Sims' boxer shorts. Where he's just completely like, I like that like would-be stinger of like, the Man in Black, he's here. He's at the festival. He's on the stage. Oh, shit. We've been played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got bamboozled, hoodwinked, if you will. My other prop that I was really, really leaning towards was the fucking handful of hypodermic needles that Tommy fucking yoinks into Michael's back with all the green shit.
I guess if I didn't take that, didn't take the boxers, I was gonna say the fucking washing machine.
Oh yeah, it must be the boogeyman. That washing machine is a haunted washing machine. First and foremost, because it's running and the power is out. What's happening? It's
running off a generator. Which, sidebar to that scene, that dad is like the biggest piece of shit in the movie, and you can't wait for him to die. But I can't not laugh when he's like, "Boogeyman, boo 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 boo,"
mm-hmm.
Or he's surprised that she finally left him. Like she finally fucking gone.
Yeah, I like when he comes in, Deborah, I'm home. Thanks for the dinner. I love thanks for the dinner. I fucking say that all the time. So
he's a piece of shit, but I don't know how he's funny in that. His last moment, he just fucking kills it. Mm-hmm. Like he's slapping women at the breakfast table. And
you know,
he's
like
still funny later in the movie.
Yeah, you gotta slap women at the breakfast table. Otherwise, you know, you're not gonna get your eggs the way you want them. Yeah, so... Holy crap, yeah. And that's arguably the best death in the movie, in the theatrical cut, because his fucking head straight up explodes, dude. It's awesome.
That's that whole other bit, too, of, like, they hired Beekler and a bunch of different effects guys to do all this kind of shit, and then all the effects kept getting cut back further and further and further and further. Just another spoke on that wheel of things. It's like, well, that wasn't quite what they initially set out to do kind of thing, because I even probably think even his death was supposed to be more gruesome than it ended up being.
I remember talking to Beekler about it when we met him in 2013. And
2013, yes.
He was very like, yeah, man, like they... Every gag that he was excited to do, they just kept... We're going to dial it back. We're going to dial it back. And he, even in 2013, I think he was still irritated about it. Like, all these props and all these things that we built, and you want to with, you want a blood tube. Like, that's what you want? You want a fucking blood tube? I designed, like, the gnarliest throat gash ever. Like, look at this fucking prosthetic, and you want just to fucking put some blood on this guy's neck. Like,
I feel like he was a guy that wouldn't let that kind of thing go. Like, all that shit that, like, they felt, like, annoyed him or wronged them, he just kind of held on to that. Like, not, like, in a negative way, but he's all... But if you just brought him back to that mindset, he would still be, like, as pissy about it.
Well...
Then... Like, he was still, like, kind of in, like... He could laugh, but he was still grumpy about the Jason Voorhees shenanigans of Part 7 with how that ended with that one bitch who was like, he looks like a frog, he looks like shit. You can't have the dad looking like a ghastly ghost figure.
So, and here's the thing, too. I mean, in 100% Beekler's defense, because you're going back to the 90s and the 80s when this obviously this stuff is all hand sculpted. It's that's the deal with practical effects, right? But like, you're talking a guy with a very small crew, and you're talking hours of pushing clay around and making molds and painting and
a lot of work.
A very and he's a very proud guy, and his effects work second to none. Like, you can put Beekler's stuff right next to KMB stuff, and I'm like, same category. Like, you know what I mean? Same
equal footing,
and with less money for sure. So,
because his budget's probably smaller, because he's gonna buy socks and shoes and shit. He just wears fucking flip flops all the time.
Mm-hmm. So for him to design a really neat Gorgag and like day of be like, oh, I've been here since 5 a.m. I'm ready to fucking glue down the prosthetic and da-da-da. And then be like, nah, we decided, you know, that's going to take too long. So we're just going to fucking dump some blood on this guy's neck or whatever. Like, imagine like, I got 4 hours of sleep. I've been here since fucking 4:30 in the morning. You just call me out of my trailer when you need me. And then they're like, we just had an assistant squirt some blood. What?
The fuck?
I'm still getting paid a full day, right?
That's where I would be like, you're still paying me for all this shit I did, though.
Right? Yeah. You motherfuckers. So, all hail John Carl. All hail John Carl Beekler and his forgotten effects in this film.
Oh, I love John Carl. Had his signature tattooed into my leg. Great fucking he's guy.
The man. Absolutely the man.
We totally both donated. We donated to his GoFundMe thing when he was on his way out.
Yeah.
I was like, it's John. We know John. John's
he's
going to
make
guy.
It. We were like, we were in that.
John's
going
to fuck it up.
Always like super optimistic when it comes to stuff like that. Same thing with Steve Dash. Always hyper optimistic about the outcome. Because you never want your childhood heroes to pass on. So
Steve Dash was that dude that was like, I truly believe could live that Dennis Leary joke of like when the Duke had to have lung, when he had lung cancer, they had to take a lung out. He's like, take them both out. I don't fucking need them. I feel like that would apply for Steve Dash as well. They're like, we gotta take a leg. Like, take them both arms too. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, you don't fuck with a tough Brooklyn dude. So
give Steve Dash metal arms and legs, he'd have been fine.
Like jacks and shit.
Yeah. Robo Man, Robo Dash.
Was there anything else you wanted to cover before we call it a day?
For this movie, no. But I can't lie; I always forget about the next movie in succession of this series. I just always bypass H2O and go immediately to Resurrection. But we can't do that. We got to go in order. But there's a little hint of where things will be probably going next week, is I always forget about H2O. Always.
Time to rewatch it. On that note, I suppose we should probably get going, because after all, there's a lot of movies out there and somebody's got to watch them. So why not us, right?
I thought Michael was a monster, but you...